I'm calling to order the Matanuska Susitna Borough School District School Board meeting. Do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum with all members present except member Lacey, who is absent and excused.
Okay, Mrs. Rutherford, you have the board goals?
Yes, I do. Matanuska Susitna Borough School District vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Vision: Matanuska Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Mission: Matanuska Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs: we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Core values: stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, and commitment. Goals: we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on their career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. And we will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Annual objectives and accountability are assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
All right, Mr. Anderton, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? All right, can I have someone move the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second.
The agenda's been approved and moved. I'm sorry, Member Cheesham.
Yes, I would like to move that we bump item K under action items up to item A. Assuming the parties are here, I didn't know if it would be better to take that on first, and since that probably more time-consuming, and then
is there any objection to moving that item K up to before we move on to other action items from members of the board? All right, so we will be approving the agenda with that one adjustment. Is there any dissent? All right, so the agenda is approved. Our next item is persons to be heard on non-agenda items.
Okay. For non-agenda items, we have these particular guidelines. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for discussion at the when they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributed to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard, or may be handled in executive session, or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. We have a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, and this is our first half hour. And there are no one has signed up on the list.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak before the school board tonight? All right. Seeing none, we have one more chance later in the meeting. We'll move on to administrative reports.
Madam President, there are no administrative reports this evening.
Okay, so that's borough and city. Palmer City Manager, would you like to come on up?
Thank you, Madam President, members of the school board, Superintendent Paramo. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the city manager for the city of Palmer. Just wanted to invite everyone to participate in Colony Day. Starts Friday, sort of our summer event. Summer is finally here, so get out and enjoy the festivities of Colony Days coming forward. The other thing is just that we are enrolling people for our summer reading program at the Palmer Public Library, so encourage people to participate and keep working on their reading skills throughout the summer. And invite anyone that would like to come to the Mat-Su Miners game next week on June 12th. It's the city of Palmer sponsoring the baseball game with the Mat-Su Miners. So if you want tickets, you can see me or come by City Hall. We've got tickets galore. So we invite you to come out and enjoy the Mat-Su Miners next Wednesday. They play our new rivals from Eagle River, Chugach, the Chinooks. So I invite you to come out and participate with that. We're going to have great weather. I guarantee it. Hopefully you'll have short memories if we don't. Thank you very much. I'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Wasilla?
Madam President, board members, Dr. Paramo. I only have one thing tonight, and that's just to give you a final update on SART. Last night at the Borough Assembly meeting was our last budget process. The budget went through, and in regards to SART, that stayed intact at $200,000. So between the state of Alaska, the legislature, the cities, the school district, a total of $333,000 in change was collected to start up SART. Training will commence in August of this year, and the team should be up and running by January 1st of 2014. So I'm just here to give you a last update. And also to thank you for your political support, because without it, it may not have happened. So I just want to tell you one more time, thank you.
Thank you. Our next item is the superintendent update.
Thank you, Madam President. It was quite a celebration, the last hour, with many successes of both our staff and students, so I appreciate being able to deliver those awards, and sorry I got a little sappy there, but it's just nice to celebrate kids and teachers and additional staff. I'm just going to mention, we're going to have a bond project update from our chief business officer, but I just wanted to let you know just some statistics that we did graduate 1,071 students the middle of May, which was very successful, our graduations, and it was really a joint effort from operations and maintenance and some of the foresight of this staff to start. We started working smarter at graduations with the city of Wasilla, using the Menard Center and purchasing items for all the schools to use, and I believe the feedback from our community was that they were just pleasantly surprised, very nice, very efficient graduations. So I thank all those involved in that, from the teachers and the students and the parents to our setup crew. This past week, as school ended, as you know, it was probably the nicest week that we've had thus far in the summer. I'm sure there's many weeks to come. But we had over 400 teachers participate in summer school. So of our 1,200, 400 of them did return. That's about a third of our staff returned for continuing education over 4 days this summer. Primarily, half those folks were in the National Math and Science Initiative, NIMSI, learning with their partners in their different career and strands of, you know, science, technology, chemistry teachers. So they learned together, and it was quite successful. Many of you stopped by, and we just appreciate that. And this summer we are going, while Luke is going to touch on the major CIP projects from the bonds, previously over the last couple of years the district had put some money into CIP just to update different school buildings, teachers' classrooms, things like that. And I had a report that outside of the bond, with all the other smaller items we're doing, from replacing carpets and painting windows, painting classrooms, that just about every school will be touched this summer with some improvement. So our staff will enter back in August with just a beautiful building to enter, as well as kids. So it's both work inside and out. And finally, just want to say things are ending well. The state, as you know, did provide some additional funding, and we'll discuss that later in the budget presentations and adoptions by Mr. Folt. But in the legislature, the state did provide for, not through the BSA, but through other means, an additional amount through safety, which we were able to really retain as many teachers and other staff that we could. And then the borough recently last night passed their budget, which included a 3%, $1.5 million increase to our school district. And so I just want to publicly thank, in a public forum, both our state delegation as well as our local assemblymen for supporting schools. And as I always say, we will promise to do our best to be the best and deliver. And certainly tonight was an example of the goodness that comes when we all work together as a community. Our kids are successful and our teachers are the best. Thank you. With that, just some information on bonds if you want updates, especially on fields and things like that.
Thank you, Dr. Promo. Bob Bechtel could not be here tonight from the borough, but he did send me an update in terms of the different contracts that have been awarded and the work that's being done this summer just since our last update. And as you recall, the last update was we went through several slides to talk about which bids were out on the street or which ones had an intent to award at that time. So I'll just run through the list that he provided me. And answer any questions you might have. The day school construction was awarded to FE Contracting. Valley Pathway School construction was awarded to Collins Construction. Kinnick Area Middle High School is being designed with master site plan and education specification ed specs in progress by Wolf and NAC Architects. The school district has obviously been a big part of those ed specs as well as master site plan committee work. And then the Big Lake Elementary School roof replacement is being designed and constructed by Earhart Roofing. Swanson Elementary School roof replacement is being designed and constructed by EP Roofing. And Colony High School roof replacement is being designed and constructed by Wolverine Supply. As you'll recall, those were several of those were design build to move the projects forward this summer to have those roofs replaced in short order. And then fire alarm replacements at Wasilla Middle School, Swanson Elementary School, and Glacier View School are in construction with North Star Electric. And lastly, the Big Lake Elementary School renovation is scheduled to be awarded late in June. So that's the update from Bob. If there are additional questions, we can field those and hopefully answer those for you at this time.
Additionally, I just want to add that every one of our high schools right now is the fields are torn up and moved, and the track is going in at Colony. The drains are being fixed at Palmer, along with the track being resurfaced, and the field and the track both at Palmer and Wasilla are currently. That actually began before school was out. As soon as they were able to get on, much of the chagrin of the soccer players because they had to get off their field, but everybody knew that next year, you know, we're all giving up a little bit of something for next year to be finished. And one, I just wanted to share one of the items to remove the Wasilla field. It is one of our older schools, very traditional school. The teams, sports teams, cut the field and into sod and sold the sod for activities purposes so they can continue, but they sold the sod, and many, many community members came out just to buy a square foot of sod and to plant in their yard because they had once played on that field.
Okay, our next item is the consent agenda. Item A, minutes May 1st. Item B, 13094, permission to accept and expend a grant. Item C, 13095, certified new hires. Item D, 13099, American Charter Academy calendar. Item E, 13101, Berriosova school calendar. Item F, 13102, Birch Tree Charter School calendar. Item G, 103, Frontiers Charter School calendar. Item H, 13104, Midnight Sun Charter School calendar. Item I, 13105, Twinley Bridge Charter School calendar.
Move the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, so it's moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? All right, that is moved. I'm sorry, is there any dissension on that? Okay, so that is moved. Action items are the next ones. Can I have someone move item K, please?
I'll move item K13-117, bid protest and bid award, bid number B13-13, dairy products for nutrition services. And it's the bid determination.
Is there a member from the public who would like to speak on this item?
I'll second.
We need a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have 2 seconds. And is there a member from the public who would like to speak on this item? Come forward and state your name for the record.
Okay, well, there you go. It's on? It's red. I'm assuming that you have the material that I sent to the district already. As I have told them, my protest is not so much on the bid award, but on the fact that there was an addendum thrown in at the last minute, which augured against any local company bidding in any kind of meaningful way, because it is essentially a cost-plus contract for basically the next 6 years, and it's based on, as a floating cost that will be based on milk market prices, and there is no such thing in the state of Alaska, and also on freight rates. And freight is a very small part of the cost of milk in milk that's produced here. So essentially, I'm asking that the addendum be put aside, and whether what you have to do that, I don't know, but. I just feel it wasn't fair, and because the bid was on the street for about 5 weeks, and it was only in the last week that the addendum was put in, and there wasn't really time for a local bidder to change anything, and the part of the addendum said that you had to use the bid, the addendum. I don't know if you're aware of the school, the farm-to-school program that the Department of Commerce has. They started it last year because Matanuska Creamery did have the school contract in the first half of 2012. There was revenue that came back, or reimbursement that came back to the borough, because they were using local milk. And this would be precluded for the duration of this contract if awarded as proposed. I'd just also like to say that when you have a local company, the local company is able to, being smaller and more nimble, is able to work as Matanuska Creamery did with the school's nutritionist, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but we reduced the sugar at their request in chocolate milk by half, and it was sugar too, not high fructose corn syrup, So in other words, we were able, because we were so small, and Northern Foods is even smaller, we were able to work with the district on its anti-obesity and greater nutritional goals, as well as being local. And I'd like to say that just about all of Matanuska Creamery's employees, including entry level and all the way through to the management and the pasteurizers and highly technical people, were all graduates of the Matsu School District. I could answer any questions if anyone
okay,
has any.
What we usually do is we don't have a question and answer period.
Okay.
We'll now hear from administration to talk about the bid. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam President. I request that. Oh, there's more. Sorry.
Come on up.
Hey there. Is it good? I'm Nick Bronner. I represent Peterkin Distributors, the awardee of the preliminary award, and I'm here just if there are any questions or concerns that I can answer. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam President, at this time, the administration does have a report. Our Chief Business Officer, Mr. Luke Fulp, will come forward.
I'll just go through a brief timeline as well as discuss what's in your packet tonight. If there's questions at that point, we can get into that detail. But the notice of notice to Northern Foods that they were sent in a bid that was it deemed non-responsive was because they did not respond to the addendum that was issued on May 3rd. The bids were due back on May 10th, and the addendum was not responded to. And so what we had was an administrative regulation that we follow with all of our bid process. Here it's also within your board packet. It's AR 3311, solicitation and acceptance of bids, item E. Only a bid acknowledging receipt of all addenda will be considered responsive. So on that basis, and you'll see a bid tabulation sheet as well within your packet, on that basis, because not all information was responded to within their proposal, their bid was deemed non-responsive. The bid tabulation shows Peterkin Distributors and the prices they've quoted us at for dairy products. And then in the column for Northern Foods, you can see that we've labeled that as a non-responsive bid. We did acknowledge a letter that was sent to us on, I'm just going to make sure I have the right date here, a letter that was sent by Northern Foods to us on May 16th. We acknowledged that as a formal bid protest and held a hearing on, let's see here, last week. It was Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. And during that hearing, we basically just listened to the complaints as they pertain to in terms of Northern Foods' concern with the addendum. We also, the board should know that we also did not receive any samples, and that was a requirement of the bid package. And so as we received no samples from Northern Foods in their letter, they requested that we have the delivery that was sent to Matsu School District in December serve as their sample for milk products. And so during the bid protest, we were able to ask what is the connection between Northern Foods and Matsu Creamery, in which case Karen Olson talked about a reorganization of the company and how Northern Foods was going to be taking on manufacturing production of the milk. A follow-up question that we had at the time was whether or not Northern Foods was prepared to produce milk currently. and they are not. They don't have all the equipment that's necessary to produce milk today for delivery. So that was a clear connection that we were able to make with the bid as it stood. We asked those questions and wanted the board to be made aware of that information as well. However, the bid was deemed non-responsive based on the fact that the addendum was not submitted, and our administrative regulations make that a requirement. Are there any questions?
So you send out the addendum on May 3rd, and the new bidding and new addendum needed to be turned in by the 10th, so 7 days for that new bidding, to fill out the addendum.
That's correct. The bid package, their bid basically, as well as the addendum in terms of the pricing that was requested within that addendum. So there was 7 days for them to respond to that addendum.
Okay.
Is that a usual process?
Yes. As far as I'm aware, I was advised by our purchasing supervisor, and this was customary. This is what we do.
Member Larson?
How was the bid's addendum sent out? Email, mail, how was it sent out?
I'm going to defer to our purchasing supervisor on that. Patty Krause is coming forward.
We send the addendums out first via fax so that they can arrive in a timely manner. If we don't have a fax number, we email them, and then we turn around and send them certified mail return receipt requested. So we have signature confirmation that they actually received the document.
Did you get that?
Yes. Yes, we did.
So it was faxed and emailed on the 7th, and it was due back when?
It was faxed and emailed on the 3rd.
On the 3rd, I mean, and due back on the 7th?
And the bid was the bid packet was due back on the 10th.
On the 10th.
Member Cordero?
In the bidding process and policies, is there, out besides the deadlines that are outlined in the process, is there always a minimum of how many companies should at least bid? Is it just if one does it, that's it? Or is there a minimum of at least two or more?
That's correct. It's public bid, competitive bidding. We just, whoever bids on it, so it could be a sole bidder.
Member Rutherford?
Aside from the process, I couldn't find a local hire clause. Do we have a local hire advantage in our bidding? Or, I mean, not local hire, local...
local purchase?
Yeah,
local preference.
Purchase preference in our policies. I couldn't find one, but...
I don't have the exact language. It may be in that board policy, but... it is minimal. It just says if preference can be granted, and I'm sure it's without providing an unfair advantage.
It doesn't lay out specific percentage or points, or it's just a. Statement of preference.
Yeah.
Madam President, I think. I believe it was in Houston or Big Lake. We've had another conversation about a bidding process, and I think the board has in the past has always said that local bids should always have a preference if it in fact provides the best benefit at the best price for the services. So even though I don't know what the language is, I know that it has been mentioned before that the board has made that a clear objective.
Member Welton.
Are we open for discussion amongst ourselves, or are we done? I know that you have. Did you have another question?
I think we can have discussion, and then if we have a question, if you'd be available for that.
And I just want to mention that the board's attorney is here tonight, and he's prepared to discuss this in executive session as well if you want to add it as an executive session item. So there's that option as well.
Okay, thank you. Member Welton.
I want to just verify what our purpose is as hearing. We don't make the determination. My understanding is we are just to see that the procedures were followed appropriately. Okay. And I have the letter that I received, email, I believe, or it was part of the board packet that said that there was a response. It just wasn't the correct response. She needed another word on that to have that word. And I just wondered if that was, you know, if how serious is it to be missing one word? If you were supposed to respond in a certain way and she only wrote part of the word, if that truly was the case and that was the situation. I'm all for following the rules, but I also want to make sure that we're fair.
Mr. Fulp.
Certainly, that's an excellent question. In the bid packet, it makes mention of the district being able to waive minor informalities or irregularities with the bid packet that's returned. Typically, what those consist of or are comprised of are someone's email being left off or just informational items that we have to go back to the vendor and ask, what is this information so that we can complete your packet for you. The response to this addendum, as it stated, none. So there was no response to the addendum. None was written on it, and we took it as non-responsive at that point. So we did not deem it a minor informality or irregularity. We just took it at face value.
Member Cheatham.
So, and if the bidder had called to ask for clarification, to find out, maybe had questions about what would be the appropriate way to respond to this, someone was available to help. If they're, is that true?
Yes, I'll just remain up here and answer questions as they're directed towards me. But yes, throughout the bid process, they're able to contact our purchasing department, ask questions that they had. There was no pre-bid conference, so to speak, but there were we were available for questions on the bid packet.
Member Larson.
This is a six-year bid, 6 years, right?
It is a three-year with the option to renew, and I'm going to look back at our purchasing supervisor again with option to renew in years 4 and 5. Is that correct? That's correct.
With the addendum, I talked about having a price of transportation or increases costs. Is that correct? So the bidder would be able to increase the cost each year due to inflationary issues. Is that what the whole thing was?
It's basically through the president. It's basically just a price fluctuation. It could have something to do with freight. It also could have just costs with consideration in terms of production and general operations. But it is something that is not unheard of in this industry to provide for that type of increase or decrease. And so it is a long period of time. And throughout that period of time, we are working with the vendor to either increase up or down. So to answer your question, Member Larson, the variable or price differential that with the milk could go up or down based on fuel prices or whatnot.
That was in the addendum. That's what you were asking for?
Through the president, yes.
And how would you estimate that kind of thing over a three-year period, an inflationary issue like that? I don't need you to answer that question, but to try to estimate cost of milk over a three-year period because of inflation, because of transportation costs or gas or whatever, It seems like a very difficult thing. And that was returned, correct? And once that's returned, is that something that you stick with from year to year, or is it fluctuate from year to year? Do you have the ability, I guess, if freight doubled and milk doubled, that the price would stay the same or in a bid? I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out, what the abstract is going to concrete the price for 3 years. Is that what we're talking about, regardless of what happens over the three-year period?
Mr. Folt, could you just explain to Mr. Larson that the cost of the food has a lot to do with how much it freight costs to get it up here, and milk is pretty heavy. So I think what they were having them do is say, this is the cost of a pint of milk, but if freight goes up this much, this is how much your pint of milk will cost. So giving them because if they bid and they keep the same cost for 3 years and freight doubles, they're out the money for 3 years. So they allowed a shipping cost, basically. They prove how much the shipping goes up, and then they allow that cost. Is that correct?
I don't want to, through the president, I don't want to misstate anything, so I can read the addendum verbatim, if that pleases the board.
Sure.
See, I'll just leave it with this. My problem with the addendum is it's a very vague, not very transparent issue. You can estimate a price of a pint of milk because of transportation, but you also can if you have shortage due to who knows what, drought or whatever. I mean, it just kind of seems like a foggy addendum to ask for, and I don't know. Thank you.
Go ahead with the addendum, Mr. Folt.
Certainly. The addendum states, no cost adjustments to any unit price shall occur within the first 90 days of contract performance. Thereafter, a product price adjustment may be made monthly. To request a price adjustment, the contractor shall, by the 15th of each month, provide the purchasing department with a new unit cost for each item under contract for the succeeding month, reflecting an increase or decrease. The confidential cost breakdown form shall be used to provide the new unit cost for each product. The cost established for the product unit cost and the freight cost as submitted with the bid shall be the basis to calculate the first cost adjustment. Each succeeding cost increase or decrease will be based on the preceding month's approved cost list. The contractor must provide written documentation such as an actual invoices from the manufacturer, supplier, or the freight company justifying the cost adjustment. The documentation, along with the confidential cost breakdown form, must be submitted for consideration for any cost adjustments. There will be no adjustments allowed in the profit cost. Profit cost shall remain a fixed dollar amount for the life of the contract, including any extension thereto. Any decrease in cost must be passed on to the Mat-Su Borough School District. So more or less, it's a confidential matrix of any type of fluctuation that may occur so that we could get a better understanding of what the price differential would be month to month. And this is something that the Anchorage School District utilizes. This is not new language that we just came up with on our own.
And Mr. Fulp, that is a pretty common kind of thing to do for freight and for hauling things to Alaska. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Member Larson.
So why wasn't that an original bid?
Through the president. This is new. This addenda was new. As the board will recall, Mat-Su Creamery relinquished the bid that they had in December. And we were left in a kind of a crunch, more to speak, in terms of finding milk over that period of time to make sure that we had it in the schools by the beginning of January. Because we are in an environment where we need to secure a contract and secure a vendor, we're doing different things to make sure that we have milk in schools. And it should be noted that Mat-Su Creamery relinquished the contract and we were left with very little time to find another vendor to deliver milk to our schools, and that was this current year.
So why wasn't the amendment put into the original bid? That was my question.
Through the president, I just don't think that we got to it, and it actually wasn't something that clearly this probably not something that we would necessarily want to have price adjustment per month. Yes, it could go up or down, but oftentimes, as we all know, the cost of doing business goes up, whether it be inflationary pressures or different markets, what have you. So clearly, month to month is less favorable for us than a commitment for an entire school year or year-to-year pricing model. But this is something that our current provider, Peterkin Distributors, came to the purchasing department to request. So this was a request of our current provider. This provider also provides milk to the Anchorage School District and operates under the same terms for the Anchorage School District. It should also be noted that in December, Peterkin, under short notice, provided us with the same pricing that they are providing the Anchorage School District with to get us through the current school year.
One follow-up. I'd like to discuss this in executive session if we could. If anybody else would second that, I'd like to carry this on into executive session.
Ms. Rutherford?
I just had one more question I wanted to get out in public. Based on the actual protest, there's, maybe it's my interpretation, implication that the winning bidder virtually wrote that addendum. But you're saying this is a same process addendum format that Anchorage School District is using.
That's correct. It's the same price adjustment language that the Anchorage School District is currently utilizing.
So it was thoroughly vetted whether it needed to go through an attorney or not, but that it, you know, it's not true that the successful bidder wrote this addendum.
I believe that through the president, to answer your question, Ms. Rutherford, the language was taken from the Anchorage School District contract.
All right, Member Cordero.
Madam President, through the president, is there? Do we need to take action on this today, or can we have a further conversation as Member Larson has requested, or does it need to be taken care of today?
I just want to remind the board that we, as a school board, do not sign contracts and we do not go out for bid. We are here to sit to say if our contract language was followed and if our purchasing department followed the rules. We do not do purchasing. Our job here today is to discuss if the rules were followed. So with that, if we want Member Larson.
That's exactly what I'd like to discuss with our attorney in executive session due to the fact that, you know, who knows what could come out of this financially. But I'd like to discuss exactly what you said with our attorney and Mr. Folt to make sure that I'm pretty straight on this issue. And right now I'm not. Thank you.
All right. Do we have a second to Mr. Larson's request?
Just a follow-up, because he was not on the notice for agenda, is this an actual issue that we can discuss today?
We can add items to our executive session if we choose to, yes. Dies for lack of a second. So we will go on with discussion of this item. Does anybody else have any more comments on this? Member Larson.
Mr. Phelps, the person that brought up the request for the month-to-month instead of yearly increase, because I assume that's what we used to do is yearly increase, Was that the winning bid? The person that won the bid brought that up, and then that went out a week before the contract timeline ended?
Through the President, Member Larson, that is correct. Peterkin Distributors contacted the school district, our current provider of milk products, and asked us to utilize the same price adjustment language that's currently in their contract with the Anchorage School District. They were honoring the same price that they were providing milk to the Anchorage School District and requested this.
And we only had two bidders. Is that correct?
Through the President, we had one bidder, one unresponsive bidder. And if I could provide some clarity, that is what is being brought before the board tonight, is whether the administration made the correct determination in its notice to Northern Foods as a non-responsive bid.
And the non-responsive bid didn't respond to what the bidder who won the contract brought forward to us as an addendum, correct?
They, Member Larson, they had a bid amendment. There's a lot of amendments made when you go out to bid for things, and they had a bid amendment like any other company who would have been bidding. So they didn't answer the bid amendment, so they didn't answer the bid.
The bid amendment that came forward came from the company that won the bid. The contractor that didn't win the bid didn't answer that amendment. So
nevertheless, it is a bid amendment. They had a week to do it, and they didn't answer that. I'm sorry. Member Welton.
So the process is that if maybe Northern Foods wanted an addendum to the contract, they could have also made an addendum that also would have had to have been responded to by the other, or is it just because they were the people that we worked with before that they got to put the addendum on there?
Okay. Through the President, just as a point of clarification, and I appreciate all the questions, this is definitely a topic that deserves a lot of attention and the board's participation tonight, so please, by no means am I not wanting to answer these or being frustrated by this process at all. There is a lot to discuss, and so, but the vendor did not issue the addendum. So, Peterkin Distributors did not issue the addendum. Peterkin Distributors came to the school district and asked us to utilize similar contract language, and if we could incorporate that at all within our bid process that they currently use and operate under with the Anchorage School District. We made a determination at the purchasing department to move forward with similar language, being that this past year we were really in a crunch. We did not have a provider for dairy products mid-year when the contract was relinquished. And we did not know, being that this was a competitive bidding process, how many bidders we would have. So we made the determination on our own that we would incorporate the same language the Anchorage School District currently has in their dairy product contract. And we made that decision. We made the addendum an official piece of that bid packet by issuing it on May 3rd.
Could you clarify what kind of response was required? Was it that confidential cost worksheet that you spoke of? Is that what kind of response were we looking for, that none or even if it had been written does not apply, didn't meet? What were we really looking for? Was it a document we were looking for back, or some actual pricing information?
I'm going to defer to our purchasing supervisor to provide as thorough an explanation as possible on this one.
Within our bid packets, we have a form that's called Appendix 1 Addendum Acknowledgement, first of all. And the last sentence in that document states, if no addendums have been issued, please indicate none below. And that is exactly the response that we received from Northern Foods. She indicated none, initialed, and dated it. That's why we based her bid as non-responsive. Also on the actual addendum that was issued, it states the confidential cost breakdown form is attached as Appendix 2. This form must be completed and submitted with the bid documents, and that form was not submitted with Northern Foods' bid.
Are there any other, Member Larson?
Yeah, I'm just a little confused, so you can straighten me out, I'm sure, Mr. Phelps. On the addendum, the request, what exactly, like Ms. Rutherford was asking, what is the request? What were you asking each company to provide? I mean, is it a scientific formula from month to month, from year to year, or what exactly is the breakdown on that? I'm just a little confused of what you were asking for on the addendum.
Patty, can you show Mr. Larson the form
I want it publicly. I want to hear it.
I'm sorry.
I want somebody to explain it to me. Explain it to me like I'm maybe a seventh or eighth grade student, okay? Nice and simple.
Through the President, Member Larson, what the addendum was trying to accomplish was a monthly price fluctuation, and if there was a monthly price fluctuation, either an increase or decrease, we wanted to know, based on that business model that company had, what variables were there month to month that could cause the price to go up or the price to go down. And we wanted to make sure that if they were referencing a certain piece of their supply chain of cost of delivering the final product to us that was increasing the cost per milk or any of the dairy products, what was that and what did they attribute it to, and the basis for that. And of course, within the addendum, we required further documentation such as, you know, fuel invoices and whatnot. So it was more or less the ability for price fluctuation month to month for the vendor to operate, and any market pressures that they experienced that could be attributed to delivering the milk. And so with the exception of any measure just to increase profit. So they could not increase their profit margin and pass that along to the Matsuboro School District, but they could reference hard costs that they experienced or decreasing costs where they changed the month-to-month price or differential.
Member Cheatham.
Okay, so I think I understand. Tell me if I'm understanding this correctly. Because some of what you just described, the month to month, that would have been, I think what you're saying is that you're just agreeing to provide that information, because you're not going to know it month to month until after you, you're not going to provide those invoices until the bid has been awarded, and then those prices, the gas or the cost of feed or whatever fluctuates, but that happens later, right? But part of the bid was sort of baseline data, so you know what the initial profit margin was and how you were going to figure out those changes in the future. Do I understand you correctly, or am I reading too much into it?
Through the President, within the first 90 days, there could be no adjustment to the cost. The cost was what we were quoted for. After that, there was the opportunity for them to provide a confidential matrix in which they would potentially reference or use, which they would use to change or differentiate between the price per milk. So those would be costs that they incurred, experienced, and then in the preceding or the succeeding month, that they would then change the price for us. So they would have to deliver that information by the 15th of each month for the successive or the upcoming month.
But the non-responsive bid was because they failed to fill out the form to turn in. For the, yeah.
That's correct. They did not acknowledge the addendum at all.
Okay. Member Cordero.
And I understand the issue, and I appreciate it. Now, how many companies provide these services nationally, and in your experience, maybe from the other school districts, are there other companies providing these services in Alaska? And what were your efforts to approach or to make sure that other companies knew about the bid so that they could also submit their applications?
Through the President, I'm going to have our purchasing supervisor, Patty Krause, discuss really the steps she took to solicit bids from providers and around the state. If you'll just mention who you sent the documents to.
Sure. We were only aware of three potential companies that we could send a bid packet to. We sent it to Quality Sales Food Service in Fairbanks, to Peterkin in Anchorage. We sent a copy of the bid packet to Havemeister Dairy in Palmer. And then we also sent it to the Plans Room, which in Anchorage, which is like a clearinghouse. They have copies of all the bids that are available throughout the state in their room. So anyone at any time can go in and see any type of bid that's available throughout the state. And we always send them a copy of our bid packet, so anyone has the opportunity to go out and see what bids are out there. We also always, lately, last year, 2 years maybe, we also have it available on our website. And all that information is referenced in our bid packet itself.
Thank you. And so a quick follow-up. So what we're voting on today is simply to uphold the bid process that took place.
Okay. Ms. Welton.
That I just wish to make a comment here. I want to see us use local whenever possible. I understand the processes for this hearing, and the hearing asks us to say whether the policy was followed. I believe the policy was followed, so I am voting to uphold it. When it comes down to voting, that's why I'm voting in the affirmative. I want to see our local businesses do well. There's a couple of steps that were missed by the local business, and I believe that, you know, it's a learning process and it's painful, but we'll know more in the future, and other people maybe can learn from that. I think that our district has followed what they're supposed to follow. It does sound a little funny that, you know, the addendum, while added by us, was added at the request of the successful bidder. But I think the process was followed.
Member Cheatham.
Yes, and I would agree. I would only add that the process was followed and the opportunity existed to get any answers answered in the process. So I'm also going to vote to affirm this move.
All right. Do we have any other comments from the board? Member Cordero.
Through the President, Madam President, I think that perhaps the next time that the policy committee meets, they can review our policies to make sure that they encourage adequately that they encourage local buy if it meets our needs and if it's something that it's within our potential, I guess, buying power, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we will vote on this. We'll do a voice vote. Member Larson.
Would you please state exactly what we are voting on?
A yes vote would be to uphold the determination of the award to Peterkin Distributors.
I think it's we're voting on that the process was followed.
Yes.
That the school district followed all state, federal,
procurement.
District procurement laws, and that the bid was awarded in a proper manner. Is that what we're voting on?
That's what we are, yes.
Okay, thank you. Now, do you want me to vote?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Member Chisholm?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. So this passes. We will take a 10-minute break.
For all schools in the state of Alaska. And he has an incredible sense of humor, and he is incredibly passionate about the education of all of our children. And I thank you for coming up with this resolution. It's great.
Thank you. It was Member Cordero. Member Rutherford.
I just wanted to add my comments that I met Carl 10 years ago at my last job working with rural villages, and I just want to thank Member Cordero for bringing this up. It was a good idea.
I, too, really appreciate Carl Rose's time he spent giving toward the children of Alaska. He is a good man and has worked really hard to improve education throughout the state of Alaska, and especially in villages where education is more of a challenge. So with that, can we pass this? Is there any dissent? All right, that is passed. Thank you so much. We're now down to item I. Can I have someone move item I, please?
I move 13-107, fiscal year 13, final budget revision.
Second.
All right, is there a public comment on this budget item? All right, administration.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm just going to request that Chief Business Officer Luke Fulp come back up to the stand, and I'm sure he'll be happy about that. He's talking quite a bit tonight. I'm just going to reference real fast in general item I and item J. There are two budgets before you. One is a final budget closing out FY13, and I want to make a note of why this is coming so late and our discussions with the fund balance, which we checked with the mayor, and the division of fund balance 7525 will be brought up by the mayor shortly, we were told, in a meeting. But also on May 20th, which was Monday, when school was to get out 4 days later and 2 days after that just because of snow, so it could have been technically the day before school got out, was the day in which we received the letter from the state certifying our enrollment. And as you know, our budget is based off of student enrollment, which we provide the year before the kids come. We take count in October, and they audit it. And the final letter for revenue received for FY13 came the second, possibly could have been the second to the last school day, because we had two snow days. It was the fourth to the last school day. But that just kind of, I think, punctuates the difficulty in budgeting in our state of Alaska, especially when we don't forward roll out funding, and it really is a kind of a, we've termed it pay-as-you-go type of system. Nevertheless, we do need to create a final budget with those new numbers for our enrollment. In addition, our salaries and benefits, we need to clarify and mark that. And then as Mr. Fulp will continue with the adoption of the new budget, remember we had some assumptions in FY14 budget, and some of those were local. We did assume that we had 3% from our local government, which did come through, but there were some additions made that came from the state government, and so you will see that budget being finalized as our best guess, so to speak, with our enrollment and such. And so I'm going to, for time's sake, turn this over to Luke Fulp to provide you the information to hopefully close out one budget and move into another. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Promo. And if it pleases the board, I'll just go through both presentations, and then the board can vote on the two actions. The first one, as Dr. Promo mentioned, was the FY13 budget revision. This really is just general housekeeping in terms of making sure that within our state revenue foundation formula that we're acknowledging the full ADM as recognized by the State of Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, which includes, within that ADM count, includes our intensive needs funding number. And as Dr. Promo mentioned, that was what was the extensive audit and review statewide, not just for us, but statewide. And we were able to hear of our final correspondence or determination on those numbers May 20th. So we received that from the Department of Education and Early Development, and now we'd like to incorporate that into the budget. The other reason why this is coming before you this kind of late in the game is because it is nice and a way to wrap up the year, reconcile all the different accounts, and then present that within our financials. And I brought our financials for FY12, but we acknowledge two different columns under the schedule of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance as allowable by GASB, the Governmental Accounting Standards Boards. The first column is your original budget. The second column is your final budget, and then they look at the variance between what you actually spent and present it there. So it is a nice way to wrap up the year, to analyze all of our spending, and to make sure that our housekeeping is in good order in terms of the accounting side of things. So with that, we looked at the salary and benefit fundings among different locations and tried to eliminate large variances between the current budget and actuals. And again, that was a lot of just combing through all of the different accounts as we close out the year. So you can see on the revenue adjustments, you can see our current budget as of May 29th, and then our revised budget as of June 5th. This is clearly pending the board's action. And this is just the change in revenue and increase in revenue because we are recognizing those additional students within our ADM. So these are the state funding factors that are tied to the average daily membership. So an overall increase of $506,000. The third reason why this is coming before the board tonight is because board policy that governs budget transfers limits the amount of transfer between locations that the superintendent can approve, superintendent and or designee can approve, to $150,000. So because this is a larger amount over that $150,000, it's coming before the board to get your blessings. And then the expense adjustments, just you can see total increases again, $509,000, is just some changes in the salaries and benefits overall to make up any increase or decrease that we saw within different account codes. But you can see that we have a $740,000 increase to contingency because we more or less have revenue that at this point we didn't have a specific expense that we needed to attach it to. So it will be there in terms of some excess dollars at year end, at least presumably at this point. So the function summary view, this just shows the breakout by function, functional area within the school district that it's being spent. We use this account code terminology to come up with the 70-30 distribution. This helps us understand whether or not, and helps the state as well, see whether or not the school district is spending 70% of expenses within the area of instruction. As you can see, I've highlighted those functional areas both in the current and revised. And just for your sake, I've put the percentages there. Although slight, this we're not moving a lot of money. Although slight, we are increasing overall instructional expenses with this revision. So that is the FY13 final budget revision. Not much there. Okay. Are there questions on that item? Right. I'll move right into the FY14 budget adoption. This is just where we're at within the budget process. Happy to say that as you look at this budget calendar that I've referenced many times over the last few months, we are at this final stage within June of school board adopting the budget with updated revenues. So the last time the board adopted the budget was in March. The school board completed a balanced budget and submitted it to the borough for approval. After that time, both the state came up with its funding plan for FY14, and then we, through many deliberations and budget meetings with the borough, understood what their funding commitment would be to the school district as well. So With that, one of the assumptions that we did have within the preliminary budget as it stood, as adopted at the end of March by the school board, was the assumption that we would get a 3% increase from the Mat-Su Borough. And so that was already in our preliminary budget, that $51.2 million. The items that were not within that budget were adjustments that were brought about as appropriations, specific appropriations through the capital budget, most notably this adjustment for state funding. This is the student safety and security enhancement of $2.4 million. Staffing reductions avoided of 24. This slide has been presented before, of course, and then some adjustments to pupil transportation, and then lastly, the health insurance rates for NEA Alaska reduce spending within that account code, object code for health insurance. So what we had is some adjustments after the end of March, and we've gone through and incorporated that into the general fund revenue. What's being presented as a total budget includes not only the general fund, but special revenue projections, I should say, in terms of grants and any other governmental funds. So this is the complete picture. This is also in line with what was adopted by the school board at the end of March. Just a quick object summary that shows any variance that you can see within the expenditures. Again, retaining staff, that's mainly what we did here. And so you can see those categories increasing here between the preliminary and modified recommended. I do apologize, we don't have a difference column that you would be able to easily see what the increase is without doing the math. However, I do want to mention that we will be presenting this as a complete budget package or publication. It will be on our website. This particular slideshow is already on our website, but the budget book that we presented with the preliminary budget will be completed as a final adopted budget that will be available to everyone and complete as it stands. So, and then lastly, the function summary. The preliminary budget was 77.84. No, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. It was, there was an increase. I put the wrong amount there. It was 77.53. No, 77.84 is the correct number. They just have the same numbers in them. 77.84 was prior to, that was the preliminary budget, and then after the modified recommended, we have just a few more dollars in the instructional codes. That's 78.44, so I'm sorry, I just briefly skimmed over those. 7, 8, and 4 in both numbers, but there is a slight increase to the modified recommended, so kudos to the board for providing even more funding to the classroom by those additional staff that were retained through this funding at the state level. And that's the presentation. If there's any questions, I can answer that at the time. Those at this time.
Member Larson.
The count, which was certified this fourth day before school ended, is that because of the special needs issue where they have to take a look at each one of those that we submit? Is that what usually causes that delay?
Through the president, yes, that actual issue was initially they did not certify 14 of our intensive. By the time we appealed, they visited us, we gave our information, we narrowed that down to two students. So it went from about $1.5 million down to about $120,000.
Just one quick follow-up. Is there some sort of a process that can, you know, cause that to, let's say, increase in speed somehow? You know, I mean, I know it's a state level, but is there something we can do to help push that through legislative bills or something on that category? Or is it just the way it's going to be every year?
Through the president, it is a state issue with EED, but we have tried to lobby with other large school districts to just have a 2% because if you took the mean of how many intensive need students, according to the whole, it's about 2% of your population. And so we requested, because of all the work that goes into the accounting of this, both at the state level and our level, it's quite a lot of staff time that could be devoted back to children. And so we had requested it to leave it at 2%. We did have some support in larger districts, but again, of the 53 school districts in Alaska, only five of them are large school districts, and one or two students moving out in smaller districts and just keeping at a 2% rate. We even suggested split the small districts and the large districts. It's just too much of a variance of funding that they wanted to be sure to count every student. And so while we're looking at the efficiencies of this process and being able to serve children, there are some places that it really comes down to a child and revenue and services. And so we haven't made much of an impact with our lobbying in this area, and it is primarily because of the demographics of the state. And so to answer your question, yes, we have. And to answer your question, no, we haven't been successful. Thank you.
Member Rutherford?
That was a significant increase in instructional dollars. Is our pupil-teacher ratio metrics standard changing because of this change in the NIXT that we're holding all the schools to?
Through the president, we did go back to this year's. But we had some additional changes. The metrics did, the way that they, especially at the elementary level, when schools grew in enrollment, they received another teacher to go back to the metrics of this year. But that also affects a secondary level of metrics of their specials. And so we had about seven schools where we added not only general education staff, but because that staff was in the metrics that we placed in there, when they go over a certain amount of teachers, we added specials too. So that was directly affected. So out of our 16 large elementary schools, we put back seven people, and there was a half-time, but there was a total of 10 FTE additionally that we made decisions on that we added back. In addition, above our metrics from this year. And those were those little oddities.
All right. I did have a question at the end of this year's budget. How much are we lapsing back to the borough? I mean, what is the lapse amount? And if we split it 75-25, how much is that further for us?
Through the president, I'm not prepared to give an exact dollar amount tonight. We have been looking at this and trying to project exactly how much we will have at year end, but clearly, as you mentioned, if this changes, let's say that we have a $4 million increase at year end in fund balance. Under the current borough code, $2 million of that would lapse to the borough. And I just use $4 million because it's easy in terms of math here for myself, not for anyone on the board. I didn't want that to sound condescending. And if it changes it to the 75-25 split, then, of course, $1 million would then lapse back. So you could be looking at close to $1 million that would, you know, if it was within that ballpark of about $4 million increase in fund balance at year end. But at this point, I'm not prepared to give an exact figure on that.
Member Cheatham.
Thank you. A few meetings ago, there was testimony about the proposed budget that we were losing nursing staff and losing the ability to have adequate referrals for the homeless population. With the status quo, is that still status quo, or is there a change as a result of the change in funding?
Go ahead.
Madam President, what was mentioned, we do have a homeless coordinator that can help process those homeless students to be able to assist and support students. But what has been lost is from Burchell High School, and they had received, under the old system of NCLB, they were a targeted school because they hadn't met AYP, so they received what was called a school improvement grant, a SIG grant, which they turned around and used to purchase more folks to assist. And so the reductions of that particular position at Burchell was due to a grant that had left. Burchell High School, in these adjustments, did receive Advanced Path, which had four employees, were moving two additional teachers, staff members, to Burchell. And in their planning for success through the new system of NCLB, through the waiver, they have chosen to place those in the classroom. So at the building level, the SIG grant is what impacted the nurse, from the testimony you heard, which was a building planning decision, not a district decision that said remove something. So when they did receive additional staffing, they placed their staffing in teaching positions.
Member Larson.
On the 75-25, I understand the probability is pretty high that will go through. However, if it does not go through, are we prepared to stick the majority of the money that will be at the end of the year into a capital project so it doesn't go back 50-50 to the borough like we have over the past couple of years?
No. We already did that.
Dr. Promo?
Through the President, that would be a determination of the budget of how the district would like to see things run. We would like to still, even if it was 50-50, to continue to build our fund reserve somewhat, as well as use the capital improvements for things like we're doing that I had mentioned at the beginning, adding carpets, playground equipment, just different things that we could add value to schools rather than have it lapse. But we are prepared to do so, but we have very good feelings, good mojo about this, that it will be 75-25, and this would allow us to create, again, a larger fund balance so that at the beginning of the year, when we need staff, we won't have to pull staff from buildings. We could actually hire additional staff. But your question, yes, we are prepared if that's the board's desire, but we have been really working on the sidelines, myself as well as our lobbyists and folks in Juneau, to push this through at the local level.
Member Cordero.
Madam President, I don't know if I should maybe ask this during the next item, but since the presentation was made for both, maybe 3 years ago, and since we're talking about Burchell, some lapse funds were set aside for Burchell to build a new library. And I believe that at the time that happened, the funds that were allocated for that were not enough to actually build the library. So I wanted to know if maybe the superintendent or Luke could give an update on whatever happened to that and where are we with that?
Go ahead. Through the President, actually, the Burchell is getting quite a bit of a facelift. They're having a renovation of those front window rooms that you see this summer. Mike Dalt and his crew of students who rebuilt this room are working over there to refurbish two large computer classrooms as well as begin the library. We tried to do that simultaneously, but believe it or not, there's so many projects out that we cannot... This is a good thing to have happen. We can't get the work done with all the wiring changes and items that need to be altered to create that room to be able to have it build ready. Because again, our students obviously don't do those big major projects where you need certifications. And so we are prepared. The money is there. I actually probably met the last week of school with about Dave Anderton and a. Probably about 12 of us met over there from purchasing. They're getting new furniture. It's in process. It is just one of those things when we place it in CIP to work on ourselves to have our dollars go further. Our
our ability to get the work done is strained a little bit, and we are just working to get wiring moved and things like that. So it is there, and it has taken a long time, but really Brochelle will have a gorgeous facelift when they open their doors in the fall.
All right, if there's no more discussion or no more comments, I'd like to look at final budget revision. It's item I-13107. If we can, is there any more last-minute discussion, any other questions on this? Okay, so we'll go to voting. A yes vote would be that we approve the final budget for FY13. So, Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Cheatham?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. So FY13's final budget is done right before the last, 2 weeks of the year? All right, so let's move on to item J. If I can have someone...
I move J13-108, fiscal year 14 budget adoption resolution number 13-008.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Do we have any comment or our discussion from earlier? Do we have public comment on the budget for FY14 budget adoption? Okay, seeing no public comment. We've already had administration, so are we ready to vote? All right, Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Cheatham?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
And I too vote yes. So we are done with action items. Yay. All right, so we move right down to non-action items. Can I have someone move item A? Do we need to move? I'm sorry, this is just for discussion. So let's, item A is 13-091, Curriculum Council Bylaws. Do we have an administrative report?
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to make a note to the board that items A, B, C, and D do involve curriculum, and they at this time are non-action items so that we may answer any questions. Our curriculum coordinator is present today, who works with our curriculum council and our teachers and administrators. She is able to answer any questions on those above courses. And if she, Ms. Becky Murphy, may please come forward and be present just in case there's any questions. We tried to provide the appropriate documents for your review, but if there are some interests, we can certainly answer them for you.
Okay, just for matter of time, why don't we look at Curriculum Council bylaws? Does anybody have any questions or comments on that Curriculum Council bylaws? All right. Then the next one is approval of new math courses. Any questions on these new math courses? Okay. Then the next one is approval of Alaska Literature course. Any questions on that? Yeah. Member Welton.
I'm just curious as to what literature some examples. That would be part of that.
Well, in the course proposal, let me see if I can pull it out for you, they did list a pretty exhaustive list of different types of literature that they would be using. It includes memoirs, historical fiction, action adventure, references, collections, fiction, poetry, mystery, and nonfiction. And it's a very long list of choices, but we could provide it for you.
Well, can you just off the top of your head give some examples?
I was at the meeting, and there are some local examples, the Snow Child and some very other local Alaskan artists from the Mat-Su as well as from the South Central area.
Okay. Correct. Like Heather Linda.
I'm sure I could look, but absolutely.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, there's a lot of different choices that they've provided.
So we're not just stuck with things that actually, you know, like Robert Service, who wasn't actually Alaskan, and those kinds of things.
No, they did their research, and as a matter of fact, at the Curriculum Council, our Alaska history teachers were very impressed with this course because of the wealth of variety that it does cover.
Member Cordero.
Is this going to be available to all of our schools or just some specific schools?
It's available for all schools. It's a semester-long 0.5 credit for English.
Right. Member Larson.
Yeah, if possible, and our board connect, I'd like to see the literature. And I know that our college kids that come back and teach school need an Alaska literature course or Alaska course similar to this, I think. Am I wrong on that?
Through the president, are you referencing to get a certificate in Alaska, you
right.
do need to take a cultural awareness course as well as an Alaskan history course.
And this wouldn't count as that, would it?
No, this is a high school education course, but this will count for a literature course for the Alaska Performance Scholarship.
Okay, that's what I was kind of getting at. But it won't towards a certification. Do we have any classes that
This is not a college-level course, no.
Okay. Do we just to follow up on that, do we have any college courses that would qualify for those two courses for in our school system right now?
Through the chair, president, we have teachers in our district who work with the University of Alaska, either Southeast or UAA or UAF, to present courses to teach them locally. We've had several local cultural diversity courses, but all of those college courses for those two classes are run through university. We don't own them. They are run through university. However, our teachers are many times the instructors here locally. A good majority of teachers, however, take these two classes online. They are both offered online through UAS, I know for sure. That's the one that's taken most often.
Thank you.
All right. If there's no more questions about this, the next one is... approval of Foundations of Human Relations course. Does anybody have any comments or questions about that? I do have a question. Tell me about this course. I'm not quite sure if it's a health course, if it's what it is.
The Foundations of Human Relations course, with all of our core courses that we put into the program of studies, we include a supplemental course for special education services, so it's actually part of the RTI process. So with the when we cleaned up the program of studies, and you had a presentation on that by Jeanine Sparks, she, when we were going through the revision, we discovered that we did not actually have in our program of studies the Human Relations Foundations course, and we would like to make sure that it is an option for our high schools because it is a course that is year-long that our students can take that really builds their foundational skills for study skills, study habits, things like that.
But it is a special needs course?
It is.
Okay.
Anytime that you see foundations, foundations math, foundations civics, like we presented last year.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on this course?
Sorry, Madam President, when you have courses like foundations in which you talk about developing intrapersonal skills, will parents be able to interact with this course? Because I suspect that a lot of times when you have special needs students that parents, of course, are part of their individualized program, but are they part of this program?
As actually part of the curriculum?
Yeah. I mean,
we could look into the actual curriculum that they use to see if that would be a component, but the parent engagement is always part of every course that we try to present and encourage parents to be highly involved.
Member Rutherford.
Yeah, I'm sorry to go backwards, but when you said foundations and the earlier one, foundations of mathematics.
Correct.
That, First of all, I thought we already had some somewhat remedial mathematics.
We do.
So how does this differ than those, and if it's a special needs course, is it available to everyone?
It is. Even though it says foundations, and a lot of our students that are enrolled in these courses are students with IEPs, are students with other types of behavior plans like 504s, the foundations of mathematics was really geared towards putting Tier 2 interventions in place. We don't have a lot of options for those kids that may just need some prerequisite skills to get them through algebra. So foundations 1 and 2 is really built as a way to beef up their skills to get them ready to take algebra so they could graduate. So they won't necessarily be special ed students. There would be a variety of kids involved.
All right. So the next item for discussion, non-action item, is American Charter Academy grades K-1. Do we have an administrative report on this?
Yes, Madam President. I was going to just take a little bit of time giving some history, because I did have a couple of board members request some additional information. Along the line, similar to Burchell, as I mentioned earlier, American Charter Academy, previously known as Mid Valley High School, was a school that did not make AYP and was at level 5 for 2 years, who had to choose a turnaround plan, which is part of the school improvement grant. So this school, American Charter Academy, became a charter school under those NCLB provisions of turnaround. Then, in 2011, American Charter Academy requested to go beyond junior high and high school to reach down into its lower grades to include more families. At that time, the request was made to go down to second grade, which is a primary classroom. So primary is considered K-1-2. Those are basically skills building classes so that kids can then basically, you know, the little kids learn to read so they can read to learn later on. So grade 2 is one of those primary classes that we consider primary. Intermediate is 3rd through 5th, and then we say middle school and high school. So they had made this request. There was quite a bit of discussion, and it did pass. And if you, those of you that were on the board, that did occur, remember, at Houston High School years ago. They did hire a teacher. They have had, since that time, for 2 years, successfully both through parent satisfaction as well as through data, for which we take a look at, been successful with those grade levels. Additionally, the state now moved to a waiver system, which ended the school improvement grant whole process. And so the questions that I've been getting was, what about school improvement grant? That really, the door on that is shut. We passed our audits. We are moving forward, and we're out of that phase, both at Burchell and the school. Consequently, under the new system, Burchell and Valley Pathways were named as focus schools. And so there's a new system. It's a star system with primary and focus schools. We don't have any of the top 14 lowest performing schools in the state, but we do have two focus schools where the state wants us to concentrate on coming up, and those are Burchell and Valley Pathways now. So just to let you know, American Charter Academy is not a focus school moving into the new school year. At this time, the principal has requested to be a K-12 charter school. We did look into it with Marion Spobotny from DEED, and there are no restrictions at the state level for a charter to be expanded. It is solely a board's decision to expand a charter school. I wanted to let you know that my concern was the process, and if we were following it, we checked with the state, that was cleared. I also observed the education going on in the school to be sure that it was sound in the primary grades, because high school, as you know, and any teacher will tell you, educating a kindergartner and a 12th grader are two different beasts. But this school had a great process, a good environment, and so at that time my conversations with the principal was that we would move this forward. She had asked for some assistance. We would move this forward to the board to honor her APC's request to move to also allow registration in K-1-2. It's coming to you so quickly because due to our electronic savviness, our registration for FY14 is already open. And so June 3rd, beginning of this week on Monday, enrollment opened for the new school year, and we've already had some calls. At this point in time, there's not an availability at a drop-down menu to register for American Charter Academy K-1. We're bringing it forward as a non-action item to hopefully have some considerations that if it does move to the new one. Now, because it was an alternative high school, moved to a charter school, changed its grades, now it changes its grades some more, this school has gone through some metamorphosis. However, the academics and the data portion, as reported through us through the state OASIS system, are sound. They are improving. They're making gains. The APC vetted this as well, and it is at this level due to the processes. And again, we checked with the state. The school checked with the state. We conferred our notes. The only thing the state is concerned is that the board gives it a stamp of approval, because the board in each district determines the grade levels of their schools. So with that, I am here to answer any questions, as well as Jean Stone, who works with charter schools. We can assist, but hopefully that was not just musing and unimportant information for you. But because I did receive two different questions, I thought that perhaps the whole board, I didn't have time to put this in a board connect, but the whole board might be interested in some of those changes. Thank you, Madam President.
Member Cordero.
Madam President, so my understanding is that now the state has received a waiver on the NCLB, and this school changed because they had not met their AYP for several years. Regardless of the waiver, would this school now be in compliance? I guess the question is, was the change successful?
They are no longer on a list for targeted assistance, because it's a metric of certain schools. Technically, their data could have remained the same and someone else gotten worse, and that's how someone else got on the list. So I'd have to do my research, you know, kind of data-driven stuff that I like. I couldn't say that. However, I can rest assured that this school is no longer a focus school, or previously known as a turnaround school, for the state. They do not have any concerns in our district for American Charter Academy.
And just a quick follow-up. When they made the request to add additional grades a few years ago, what was the demand like? How many kids signed up for those lower grades?
Go ahead. Through their president, it was actually, I would say the majority of their students are about 50-50, so the majority of their students are now elementary grades, and so it is a school of choice for primary kids. It is being selected, and more parents would like to have younger children attend there with their siblings, therefore the APC put that request through.
All right. Member Larson.
Now, originally this Medalli was an alternative school totally, is that correct? Before they went to a charter school, that they took mostly alternative kids from high school? Let me just go through the whole thing. So they were alternative school, but through our RTI and our work with alternative school kids, I assume alternative kids are starting to drop away. And when American Charter went to a charter school, they are going to be virtually a full-functioning charter school, similar to other charter schools like American Charter, I assume. Most of our alternative kids will be going to Burchell and Valley Pathways and working within the high schools themselves through the RTI, thank you, Ackermans, I love them, RTI network. Is that a safe assumption to state? Thank you.
You made some excellent points. I just want to clarify one thing, that the state's name for schools that are not comprehensive high schools that don't have a separate draw area are called alternative, but the children in them aren't necessarily called alternative. So they are just students who are at risk. And I think that's exactly what you meant. So the alternative schools, you are absolutely correct that the, you know, students previously who may not have been successful at comprehensive high schools, those large facilities, many times with thousands of other students, would choose a smaller setting that just focused on and supported the needs of each individual child. And you mentioned Burchell, Valley Pathways, and at this time it was Mid Valley and then American Charter. Consequently, interestingly enough, we started RTI, and there, because they are alternative schools, there is a number of enrollment, which is 175 students, that these schools must maintain, and they are given a little bit of a provision if they're declining, so you don't, you know, shut down a school. But if they don't continue after 3 years to keep 175 students, their enrollment just rolls into the largest school in our state, or in our district, rather. So we technically will lose funding as a separate school. And it's a significant amount of money. At one time, we had looked at this, and it was close to $800,000 to $1 million at each school for the whole district. Now, at Burchell, at Valley Pathways, and at American Charter Academy, all three of our alternative schools are experiencing a decline in enrollment. All three fell below that 175 threshold. The consequence this year was 10% of their revenue was targeted, but that will go decrease, and in time they will not be considered a separate school. They will only be funded in our district as part of Wasilla High School. So that's correct, and so we are in trouble, and we would like to believe the enrollment at our neighborhood schools is increasing, both through having additional opportunities during the school day because there's more opportunities in different classes to take, RTI, teacher effectiveness. You could just, everything maybe combined, our neighborhood schools are increasing enrollment. So our students aren't choosing these. Some of the remedies we've selected, we didn't have a middle school alternative in Palmer, so Valley Pathways is going to grow in the future from 7 through 12. So that would take in more students to remain a solid school. And that's just pre-planning to be sure that we don't get into any trouble. Burchell, we're moving Advanced Path over to Burchell so that they can meet their 175 quota. They only had 152 students this year. Everything that you had mentioned is, you know, correct. And I just wanted to give those. It is really based off of state policy that's having us react this way because of the funding that is affected when students are not choosing. Students are not choosing alternative placements. A lot of them are choosing to stay at their high school or going to homeschool in order to graduate and find ways to graduate. Sorry if that was kind of long, but I just wanted to provide the full background as to how these schools are funded and enrollment affects them.
Thank you.
All right. Is there any other comment on this item? All right, let's talk about, we're going to do the first reading on board policy, homeschool law, alternative education program, and I believe we need to do this to be in context with state law.
Madam President, you're actually correct. This is put into provision next year. Any student who is on homeschool, an accredited homeschool, may participate in their local area in sports in a school. And so we are following policy, being sure that we create our policy so that we have a process for kids to come into our system. And, of course, ASA regulates all those grade checks, and so we have to articulate a system for that. And this is just following state law, being sure that we are in compliance with state law.
Member Larson.
It's not like we've changed. We're just changing state law. We've done this all along anyway. Is that correct? I mean, have we had issues with it? Totally.
Through the president, in our own district's homeschool, we have always done this. However, this could be a homeschool from Raven Homeschool or IDEA. If the students live within the boundaries of the borough and the borough school district, no matter which school they chose, whether it was a Matsuboro school district school or another school district that's providing homeschool, they may participate locally, and that's what the law stated.
Just one last follow-up. What about the statewide school correspondence? I know there was some issue about kids going to Chugach that lived in this district, or how's that going to be affected?
Through the president, that issue that happened at Chugach on the football field was the impetus to change this law, so there won't be any problems. Yeah.
So just as a question, if we have a child who's going, who lives in our borough, who is going to Raven Correspondence School, and they choose to come to one of our schools and play football, where do we get that funding for them to play football?
Madam President, the funding, each student would pay the fees as per any other student according to policy, but the funding essentially, because the state funds us 75% of our funding anyway. They say that they are already funding and the local government pays 25%. They're basically stating that the local share in our borough covers that expenditure, that really they are already paying that for kids in our district, that there is no additional funds. However, our making this work, I think, is part of it. And if there are additional expenses, large school districts such as ours can absorb it. It is really the smaller school districts that are experiencing the most challenge, they feel, because they have such few but small budgets anyway. But we believe that the minimal change, we offer so many participation to kids already that we don't expect a significant change.
Okay, so kids say they're going to Raven and they decide they want to play high school football. Do they need to go to their neighborhood high school, or can they choose any high school in our district?
Through the president, they would go to their boundary school to participate.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions on this? Okay. So we are down to the first reading for Board Policy 5144, Student Rights and Responsibilities. Do we have an administrative report?
Through the president, I did receive some questions in regard to this, so I would request LeBron McPhail to perhaps maybe do his last executive report. Give him a hard time, Ole.
Madam President, More than questions, these are just comments to, because technology continues to evolve and the suggested policy has specific applications or programs or names, my suggestion would be that you revise them and make it a little more generic. So, for example, there's a section on page 11 of 27, section 24, when it talks about social media networking. It says, the new section reads, all students are responsible for the content of their MySpace, Facebook, or other social networking pages. I think just simply stating that all students are responsible for the content that they publish in any social media platform takes care of any future technologies that may not be available now. Because like I said, this keeping up with technology is close to impossible. It just keeps changing every day. And in that paragraph too, it says here, if anything on one of these pages is seen as offensive, abusive, or embarrassing to the students, the student will be subject to disciplinary action by the school. Which student? The one who is posting something that is embarrassing for someone else, or the one who is being embarrassed about it? I mean, it's not clear. So my suggestion is that you really clarify this, because 2 years from now, someone can read this in a very different way than what the intent was. So that's just my suggestion. I don't know who drafted this, but I would run it by the lawyers, because this needs to really be clarified. And the reason why I'm also posting this is the other area on sexual assault, and sorry, I lost the page here. Page 10, my apologies. And one of the things that, of course, Alaska continues to be number one is sexual abuse, child abuse, and assault. And so I commend you for making sure that we are on top of the problem. The second paragraph, when he talks about sexual misconduct on page 10, my only comment would be that who makes the determination of what the misconduct was? Because we've heard from examples in the lower 48 and other school districts in which a first grader comes to school and hawks another child, because that's just what they do. It may be a cultural issue, and it may be that someone that reads this in a very strict way considers that sexual assault. Who makes that determination? And I think that it just needs to be clarified, because I know what the intent is, but a few years from now, that intent gets lost. So that's just my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Member Larson.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Cordero's statements. Also, I was outside this year, this winter, and I saw that one school district is teaching their, which would be our fifth graders going into sixth grade, a small class, per se, of 2 or 3 hours, talking to these children about the social network and the fact that anything that they post is a lifetime posting and can come back to them in adulthood, and the importance of some sort of social networking responsibility, ethics, and moral obligation on what you do, and the fact that you don't want this stuff to affect your career and your life. And they did that because of examples of kids posting stuff in high school and then ending up in major issues when they went to try to get employment. I know that was a suggestion that may be made in our retreat, but I just want to throw that out publicly, that the importance of this policy to try to address it, but we also need to do what we do, and that's what's best for children. What it says is to try to educate our children on this issue also. Thank you.
All right, are there any other member Cheesham?
Oh, well, thank you, and I think the previous comments were very good. I wanted to just give you a heads up. There's another issue, and I was working on drafting some language to propose that might deal with this. But the other things, you know, I think all of us have talked about stories that have happened outside in other districts, and the one that I ran into was
a student who perhaps overzealously was critical of a commissioner of education and managed to get suspended for that, and under the there that and that was it was called bullying, and I you know, was hoping I can come up with some language that will continue to protect people and protect their safety, both the adults and the children, but also you know, one of our mandates is to teach people about the Constitution and about the freedom and responsibility of their speech. And so when it comes up again, I hope I can come up with some language to propose that we can talk about that would, you know, just any time it's dealing with a disagreement with staff or school policy, that there's some leeway that it's not automatically that this is bullying if they disagree. But at the same time, they can start bullying. They can, if it becomes unrelenting, if it becomes personal, there's a line. So it's how do we identify where that line is in a way. It's not easy. Yeah.
Member Larson.
And just one follow-up, Mr. McVay, you're going to say something. You can say something publicly now and don't worry about it, you know. I mean, it'll follow. But in reality, are we looking at this policy as a review quarterly on it? I mean, trying to keep ahead of this whole issue, or how do you foresee this policy?
Well, through the board president, each year we do an update with our handbook, and it's things that come up, you know, from one year to another, with cyberbullying, with bullying altogether. All of these are things that we bring up into our Students' Rights and Responsibility Handbook, but it's also a conversation that we have among our principals, too, that we bring this information in. And then at times there's things that, like you're talking about right now, where we bring that information in regards to sexting, harassment, things from the legislators, and so forth. So we are looking at this here on a day-to-day basis throughout the year as we bring this here before you. So, yes, we are continually looking at this, the things that you're talking about in regards to educating our students. That is going on, bullying blocks, OVAS. There's just many different things in regards to bullying prevention that we're doing already.
Okay, I think we're finished with this one. So we are down to the last non-action item. Yeah. Thank you, LeBron.
Okay, so the last non-action item is new high school, middle school name. Do we have an administrative report?
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to share that there is a local group of school employees and local stakeholders that live in the area of Kinnick that have been involved in naming the school. There is a board policy that determines and states that the board would have a public process, and naming a school and by having the name on an agenda is basically can count for your public process. But what we did was bring some suggestions, because we hadn't there had been a few that have come to us, but nothing that's really come to the board. So we went out to the community to ask the community their thoughts in regard to the new schools down Kinnick. And we started with the high school, because that's the one that is being built first, the junior senior high school, and then we'll move to the elementary. But it did come to light that we have been asked through the architects that if there was a name, that they could incorporate the name perhaps into the art or into some kind of the structure of the building. So the sooner we name, the better. The borough does not like to call that the school down Kinnick Road, and so they have requested that. So what we did to prepare the board was to just work with community folks to come up with some ideas, because there haven't been ideas presented to the board, and generally the public comes forward. So again, we went to the public, and two names were provided, and at the time we were just talking about the high school. And however, we do have an elementary school. Because we are in this electronic world, I just thought, you know, if the board wanted to make a decision, they could make a decision and put this on the agenda for the next time. Or we could do something fun, like have an online survey where community selects the name, and we could tally that, and then those tallies can be brought back to the board. The board could accept both of these names coming from that community and say one's going to be the high school, one's going to be the elementary school, and vote on that. There's many different ways. The requirement in policy is that it is brought to the board agenda to be voted on in a public setting, and that will be made next time we move forward. But I wanted to get the board's desires included into how you would like more information gathered on the new school names. And so hence we have Denina and Joe Reddington Sr. as two suggestions. And I tried to write it out. It's really open to the board. It's kind of a fun, exciting thing for you to do and to have your footprint on. And so at this time, I just wanted to provide the information.
Member Welton.
I just want some clarification. We're saying it's pushed. It says junior, senior high. Are we talking about 6th, 7th, 8th, or are we talking about 7th, 8th up? Are we talking 6th grade also?
No.
Because the structure for this school is to change into a middle school and a high school, and because of all of our other schools are middle schools, this would be a 6th through 12th grade, separated at first in two different areas of the school and then move forward. But the newer school that will be built would actually turn into the high school. So the school that's being built right now, in planning, in the 20-year plan that was presented last year or a couple years ago before the bond, would be the middle school that is adjacent to a soon to be high school out there.
Okay. So the name would then be whatever it is, middle school, whatever it is, high school, when they split.
Through the president, at the time of the new school naming, the board, sitting board at the time, would determine that. It's not set in any policy.
Okay. Member Cordero.
Through the chair, Dr. Paramo, do you think that since you said, asked the board for ideas on how to get more input, do you think iParent could be used as a way of surveying the parents of children that live in those communities to give some feedback?
Through the president, I think that would be a great idea. We could target the students. Right now, we know the students who would be attending the middle high school. There's over 1,000 of them right now, mile four and beyond. The elementary school might be a little bit different, but they really would be the same families, because we don't know the elementary school because it's so far out. We don't necessarily know the students. However, we could assert that same community would be those folks. So we could target that area through electronics and send out a message that says, these are some ideas. Let us know what your thoughts are.
I think that would be a great idea. Let the people out there decide what their new middle high school will be called. I think that's great. Any comments on that? Any other ideas?
Go on.
Member Rutherford?
So would we be making it clear to them, because it's not real clear to me, the what could happen in the future? The fact that this is the name of this school, and then that name will stick with the middle school, a future high school may or may not have that name, correct? So I would think they would want that to be clear. And then we have the leeway to name the elementary school already?
Through the president, yes, a bond passed. There will be a school built there. Mm-hmm. And they would request that we, the borough has requested, can you guys get on this? Can you please name it? And that's why we didn't want to come to the board without any information, so that's why we gathered some folks together to bring some information for the board to have their desires met moving into the future.
So virtually, these two names, one could be the elementary school and one could be the high school, correct? I mean, virtually, that could end up that way, right?
Through the president, yes. These two names came to the top of the list from the working group that brought it back to the parent on the committee was a parent from Wasilla Middle School who brought it back to the PTA there. So there was a further reach, but certainly with social media and iParent and other things, we could really make a deliberate effort if you'd like. But yes, these both names were approved by that smaller community group.
All right. So does the board support putting that on for iParent or some way for the people out that way to have some say in the naming of the school?
And that's the naming of both schools, correct? Both high school and middle school, since we want them both named, and these are the names we're going to throw out there. Is that correct?
To the president, at this time, there isn't a bond and any approval to build a high school out Kinnick. Right now, it is basically a middle high school and an elementary school. So the two schools that have been voter approved and are slated to be built are an elementary school and a middle school. The question is, we have in opening up schools next to each other who share the same landscape, named the schools the same. And I think that was Member Welton's point that when Colony High School was built and they built Colony Middle School adjacent, they were named the same name. When Houston used to be a junior high school and be 7 through 12, when the new high school was built, it became Houston Middle School, Houston High. So it is very likely that the high school once built will continue with that name, but there isn't a policy that would keep it that way. So at this point in time, the two names for which the borough is seeking the direction of the board and the decision of the board is an elementary school, which would be built in approximately 3 to 4 years, and a high school, which would open up in 2 years. Middle high school, rather.
Madam President, my suggestion would be to have the question say both names for each one, and then depending on the feedback that we get, then we'll make a decision.
Okay.
I agree.
All right. Does that sound okay with the board?
May I have one clarifying? I'm sorry. We could put these two names forward. Would you like to also have an open-ended that says you can send in any other new name or just leave it at the small committees going large? Because we could do that as well.
Well, my viewpoint on that is we had a committee that came up with these two names, and let's just stick with these two names.
Okay. All right. We'll stick with those two names. Okay.
And so my direction is to target the area for which the zonings possibly could happen for those schools and ask the community which name they would like for which school, and then bring that back to the board.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Will do.
And Madam President?
Yes.
And I think that this would also be a good pilot experiment to see how we could use iParent to get more community feedback on specific issues and targeting communities too. So just a thought.
Great. Okay. All right. So we are finally down to future items, future business. June 7th, we have a 6 p.m. school board retreat. So that's this Friday starting at 6. The agenda got sent to you, and I believe it's also posted on the district website. June 8th, we continue that school board retreat at 8:30 in the morning. We will have a break to be able to go to the Colony Days parade around lunchtime. June 18th, we have a 4 p.m. school board policy committee meeting at the central office. Is that correct? Okay. June 18th, June 19th at 6, we have a regular school board meeting. we have to cover at that meeting some of these non-action items. I was hoping we wouldn't have a meeting, and I will be gone at this time, so I would ask Member Cordero to chair that meeting. If is there any way we can roll these non-action items that we need to pass, the ones that we need to the student rights and responsibilities, homeschool one that we need to pass, American Charter Academy we should probably talk about. Is there any way we could roll that into our board retreat, or is it not enough notice?
Through the president, just so you know, their 24-hour notice is what is required. So according to the law in Open Meetings Act, if the board desired, we could have a separate section on Saturday, if you'd like, to cover those three items. I would also suggest another item. The board is aware, as well as our employees, that there is a potential contract ratification perhaps by MSEA, and we could write and that's being done currently, and into next week we would know, we could technically write something that would pass that contract for 1 year given the approval of MSEA. So we could make that happen. We did check with our with counsel on that, and that would be possible, and that would allow basically, it's really at the level of the association at this point. And that would be a very important item to have pass in addition to these that isn't on non-action. But we could have pending MSEA that the board does approve because of understanding what that agreement was. Thank you.
Okay. Member Cheesen.
Yeah, I need to let you know that I will not be at the June 18th meeting either. So, sorry about that.
Okay.
June 19th, yes.
All right. How do other members feel about adding it to our board retreat agenda and making that our last meeting of the year? Member Cordero.
I think that's good. I just want to make sure that administration, they feel that they have enough time to make some of the recommendations to the language on the student policies. If there's enough, if you think there's enough time, then fine.
We'll make it happen.
Member Welton.
I don't know the American Charter Academy to have input from people. Would they have enough time to note whether they need to be here on Saturday or Friday, whichever day you're going to do it, and also being colony days and stuff, is that going to create undue hardship for people? Do we know if Ms. Huggins is even around?
I saw her yesterday, so I believe she's in town.
Okay. All right. I just
how does
don't
the board feel? Do you think it's too rushed for people to be able to?
I don't want to cut her off at the knees if anybody else who has an issue. You know, it seems like that we might work too fast, and they might feel if we voted against it that we did it on purpose, and I don't want it to come across like that.
Principal Huggins did request as soon as possible on her her item.
Okay.
Okay. Can we have this then added to our agenda for the board retreat and a notice put out? What would be best? Come at 8 instead of 8:30. I don't think we can have the public come at 8 if they want to make comments on this. So maybe
we could just put cots out and stay here overnight and have a sleepover.
Why don't we do it on Saturday at 1:00 when we come back from lunch, if that fits on the agenda? Okay. All right. Okay. So future items, future business. Does anybody else have any additions to this? No, I think we're all kind of running down here. All right, so we are down to persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I do not see anybody who wasn't here for the earlier rules for persons to be heard on non-agenda items. So those same rules apply. Is there anyone who would like to speak before the board on non-agenda items? This is going to be your last school board meeting of the year, guys. So we're almost done. All right, so nobody to be heard on non-agenda items. Our next correspondence and board committee reports. Do we have any correspondence and board committee? No correspondence, board committee. Comments from the school board and administration. Dina.
Mr. Stone?
Just one last opportunity to thank Lee Ron McPhail for all the great service in the school district.
Mr. Fulp? Okay. I would just like to thank Executive Director Lee Brian McPhail, as well as for his service and many years of service, and really the entire staff and the school board. I know I've said it before, but I enjoy my job. We had a great, successful year. I look forward to the retreat to share some of those items and to plan for the future so that we can only get better. So thank you.
All right. Member Larson, do you have any comments?
No, but yes. LeBron, you can post your comments on Facebook once you're retired. Okay. I look forward to seeing those, by the way. Just have a good summer, and if you don't have anything to do and you have to be at the retreat, be there. But if you don't have to be there, you can come see our retreat. It'd be a zest, I'm sure. So, no, I look forward to the retreat. I look forward to doing our future goals and then having a good summer. Thank you.
Member Cheesham.
No comment.
Member Wilton.
But, all of you went to as many or more graduations as I went to, and I have to say there was a lot of great things that happened at the graduations, and I really, really appreciate a lot of my... I ended up at Valley Pathways Picnic since they did not have a celebration at the end of their graduation. And I spent several hours there and really talked with the kids and saw the kayak. There was a picture of it on our website, but saw the kayak. And it was a great time, and I really, really enjoyed that. So anytime you can get to the picnics at any of the schools, they're usually quite good. So I'm looking forward to the Alaskan literature. I want to read some of it myself.
Member Cordero.
Thank you, Madam President. Mr. Falk, thank you so much for the presentation on the budgets. And I also attended several graduations and promotions. I truly enjoy promotions. Because then a few years later, I get to see those kids in high school. And I always tell them, I hope to see you in 4 years from now so I can be shaking your hand when you graduate from high school. Fortunately, last week I had to, I was not able to the last week of promotions, I had to miss a few because I had to have surgery. And so I feel really bad, but hopefully someone else was able to attend from the board. But they were fabulous. Wasilla High School graduation was one of the smoothest ceremonies I have seen in all my years as a school board member. So congratulations to whomever planned that. Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
I can't even describe how much I enjoyed the graduations and promotions, especially the smaller schools. I didn't do that on purpose. I had conflict with the large schools, but I went to a lot of the small ones. I learned how to say Beryozova. And learned a lot about that little Russian school. It was very moving. Those small schools have such moving ceremonies because they have 2, 4, 6, 12 kids, and they're able to tell a story about every single child. Even Burchell had me a little teary because I think it was 29 students graduating, something like that, and they told a story about every single one of them and the challenges that those kids overcame to get to where they are and how most of them didn't think they'd ever be walking across that stage. It was really, really touching. I had I went to several promotions also, and I have a lot more, I feel like I have a lot more information now about 8th grade promotion, and I do want to, next year we have an extra school day built in beyond state requirements, so I hope we don't have to extend school again. If we are ever in that position, I want to have a longer discussion about moving 8th grade promotion. I know more now, and I'm not sure I would have voted to move it this time, but I may have, I may not have, but I just, I feel I'm more informed about going, and that's why we go to these things, to learn more about the actual experience. And the last thing I did was the Indian Education programs, I forgot what they called it, over at Wasilla Middle School, gathering for all the children in that federal Indian Education program. And that was wonderful. It was hugely attended. It was a potluck. There were so many people there, and there was singing and dancing, and it was really well done. I was really pleased to see the community actually show up for something like that. Oh, and I just on a personal note, want to say as a Butte Elementary parent, Butte Elementary School continues to benefit from Mr. McPhail's leadership many years ago. He's been an asset for a long time, and we'll miss him.
All right. I, too, want to thank Mr. McPhail. When I worked for the school district years ago, he was always a supportive person and a happy face to talk to, so I appreciate you. And I will miss you. I hope you have a good retirement and do lots of fun things. So that's it for comments on board and administration. We're going to move into executive session. Matters the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. We're going into an executive session for a negotiation update and superintendent evaluation. With us for negotiation update will be Saul Freeman, Katie Gardner, Luke Fulp, Jean Stone, and Dina Paramo. And then for superintendent evaluation will be the board and, of course, the superintendent. And Katie Gardner will be there.
I so move.
I second it.
Thank you.